I grew up in religious purity culture. Specifically, I grew up in a non-denominational evangelical church in the early 1990s, is when I was in junior high. And unbeknownst to me, this was the beginning of the purity movement, a movement that started in the early 90s and went through to the early 2000s that took this concept of what we now call purity culture. Back then, that wasn't the name. That's a pretty relatively new name. But this concept of a very strict gender binary, men are expected to be stereotypically masculine, strong leaders of the household and the church, and women expected to be stereotypically feminine followers and supporters of male leadership, etc. The exclusive that you wanted me to mention is that I also have another chapter of my life that doesn't come up in my book, and so I don't get asked about it in interviews very often, but you and I have been talking about it, Devin, and that is that my brother, my older brother, who actually passed away a year and a half ago, had cerebral palsy, severe cerebral palsy. And he and I have had a lot of conversations about purity culture and the assumptions in purity culture around body and all kinds of things.
Welcome to the Wheel With It podcast with your host, Devin. At Wheel With It, we are dedicated to exploring DEI issues in a fair, balanced, and fun way. Let's get into the episode.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Wheel With It. I am your host, Devin Readers, and today we have Linda K. Quine on the podcast. This is a really needed conversation, I think. It might be heavy for some people to listen to, but I think it's needed. And we tried to keep it light, so it shouldn't be too heavy. But we talked about the intersection, purity culture, and ableism, and Linda is a delight. So please enjoy my conversation with Linda K. Quine.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Wheel With It, and we are already having technical difficulties, so this should be fun. Today we have Linda K. Quine. She is a purity culture coach, and I'm gonna let her tell you a little bit more about the exclusive that we have today, but tell us about yourself first, Linda.
Sure. So, I grew up in religious purity culture. Specifically, I grew up in a non-denominational evangelical church in the early 1990s, is when I was in junior high. And unbeknownst to me, this was the beginning of the purity movement, a movement that started in the early 90s and went through to the early 2000s that took this concept of what we now call purity culture. Back then, that wasn't the name. That's a pretty relatively new name. But this concept of a very strict gender binary, men are expected to be stereotypically masculine, strong leaders of the household and the church, and women expected to be stereotypically feminine followers and supporters of male leadership, et cetera. And layered
and we're not,
on.
And we're not saying that's bad, just to be clear. For the record, any of you that know me know how much I love Jeff Probst, and I want to be for strong male leaders. It's okay. Strong men are okay. It's just that's what the movement was. We're not saying that's bad or anything. Okay, go ahead.
Maybe I'll differentiate that. For me, I hear you with your where you're coming from. For me, any kind of expectation of everyone fitting into something overly simplistic leaves other people out. I'm all for a stereotypical masculine man if that's authentically who he is. But there are plenty of other people who don't fit into that binary who are harmed, I think, by an overly reductive expectation, right? Yes. So that would be my perspective anyway.
Yes, that's what I meant. I just didn't want the Twitter comments.
Yeah, understood. Understood. Yeah. Yeah. And then under that gender binary is a set of sexual expectations, which varies for men and women, girls and boys within the community, in that men and boys are often taught about sexuality and their bodies through the lens of what they do, whereas girls and women are taught about sexuality and their bodies and purity culture through the lens of who they are, right? So a man or a boy might make a sexual choice. He might do something sexual, but women and girls in purity culture learn they are physically changed by their sexuality. Whether it is that they have inspired sexual thoughts in someone else by the way that they are walking, talking, dressing, whatever it is, having had a sexual experience, whether it was wanted or unwanted, it decreases their purity within this realm of purity culture. So these are the kinds of messages that I was growing up with. And purity, the purity movement that I grew up with took those messages and really skyrocketed them. We were going to purity themed concerts and purity themed retreats and camps and wearing purity rings and taking purity pledges and so on and so forth. And I remember really feeling as the years went on, more and more of me felt like I didn't have a way to survive within this culture. Everything about me felt like it was being sexualized. If I was talking to a boy, oh, I must be flirting with him, right? If I wore a dress that was high enough at the top and low enough at the ankles, they would say, oh, it was too low in the back. And I, it was like I was, there was just no wing. It just felt like everything about me, in a moment where I was having what I felt was a deeply spiritual experience, I was being sexualized by someone else, right? And eventually it pushed me out of the church. And when I left, I remember thinking, now I will be able to at least be myself. I'll at least be able to be the human being that I am with all of the messy parts of me that have not been accepted previously. And what I discovered was that wasn't true because I had so deeply internalized a lot of these teachings that they lived inside of me and controlled my thought life and my choices, even though I didn't agree with them anymore. And so that was the beginning of my kind of recovery. I had that was about 20 years ago, and I have spent many years delving into my own recovery of my own authentic selfhood, which involved interviewing people for almost 20 years around the country and around the world, primarily women, about culture and what the impacts of having grown up in purity culture have been on their adult lives. And discovering the myriad ways in which people are suffering as a result of having internalized a lot of notions of selfhood that have led to shame and fear and anxiety and even PTSD in some cases. So these days, I'm the author of a book called Pure Inside: The Evangelical Movement That Shamed a Generation of Young Women and How I Broke Free. Though to be clear, not only young women, of course, are shamed within this larger culture, but and then I also am a purity culture recovery coach, as you mentioned. So these are things that I talk about fairly regularly. The exclusive that you wanted me to mention is that I also have another chapter of my life that doesn't come up in my book, and so I don't get asked about it in interviews very often, but you and I have been talking about it, Devin, and that is that my brother, my older brother, who actually passed away a year and a half ago, had cerebral palsy, severe cerebral palsy. And he and I have had a lot of conversations about purity culture and the assumptions in purity culture around body and all kinds of things, right? That really overlaps with the diversity and inclusion conversation is never really talked about. So I'm excited to delve into some of that today.
So, thank you for giving us the exclusive, by the way. I can't make it up. I've been nervous for this one because we don't often get exclusives around here. And I'm like, I just want to do this well. But what do you think? What have you noticed of the stuff around purity culture and disability? And then I'll get into my
Yeah, one of the things I talked a little bit about the gender binary and purity culture. So I think that's a good example of one of the ways in which purity culture is reductive and overly simplistic and makes a lot of assumptions that leave a lot of people out. Without naming it, there are assumptions of obviously, sexual orientation, that's a big part of it. But there are also assumptions about race. There are assumptions about age. There are assumptions about physical ability. Even the way that sex is talked about within purity culture is like incredibly reductive and does not leave a large segments of the population. It leaves them out of the conversation, right? So there is a kind of invisibility that a lot of people experience within purity culture if they're the wrong body size, if they're 40 and they are still living by purity culture's rules, and the books aren't talking about the 40-year-old women who I'm doing coaching with who feel like there's something wrong with them. The books are always talking about the young women, right? If they are being sexualized because of their race and assumptions that we have around race and sexualization, if they're being desexualized, sorry, my headphone came out. If they're being desexualized because of their physical ability, like there are all kinds of things that are just invisible within that culture and within that really overly simplistic version of what a healthy sexuality is.
Yeah, and can you talk a little bit more about the desexualization of people with disabilities? Because I've noticed that too, and it's crazy. I don't know. I have theories, but that's a whole nother podcast. But I don't know why that's still here.
Yeah, agreed. It's a really problematic. It's a really problematic trend that still continues. That we have, and it goes beyond the disability conversation. There are certain races that we desexualize, like Asian men, and there are certain races that we sexualize, like Black men, right? And in the disability community, it is a largely desexualized population. There are just assumptions that are around, oh, this population doesn't have these feelings. This population doesn't have these desires. This population doesn't have these needs. And then also there's like a lack of respect. When people do have questions, they might ask a question like, can you have sex? What? None of your business, right? Like, why do you think you can ask me that question?
I heard the story. It was from a YouTube vlogger. Her vlog is called Sitting Pretty. You should watch it. Sitting Pretty with Lolo. And I don't know if the story is true or not, but I believe it just from the stuff that I've encountered, not necessarily about sex, but like, just like the stupid stuff of people treating me like I'm retarded and everything. Mm. So she was in this club, like a normal 20-something. Like, I don't think she's as severe as me, like disabled as me. Like, they don't even know exactly what she has. Well, no, she just got diagnosed with EDS, but that's for years they didn't know. Sorry, she was in this club and dancing and doing what normal 20-year-olds do. And I never went to a club, but I would imagine that was something that normal 20-year-olds do. And my friends have done that. So anyway, she was in this club and she was dancing, having a good time. And I don't know if she had to pay for a drink that she'd ordered. And she didn't have any cash on her. And I don't know if she asked to borrow some cash from this guy and then Venmo him back later or something. But anyway, he gives her this money and leans down to her and whispers, it's my fantasy to have sex with somebody in a wheelchair.
Exactly. Yeah, so there's the hypersexualization component of it too. There's somehow this, yeah.
So you either
it shows up in both.
You either can't have sex at all, or you are somebody's like sick sexual fantasy.
Yeah, you can be hyper eroticized or de-eroticized. Yeah. And there's like a lack of sexual boundary, right? It's not appropriate to say that to anybody.
Yeah, ask them if their private parts, unless you're a therapist, ask them if their private parts work.
Yeah, it's like I've known you 5 minutes. So this was actually something that came up when, so for a while, I also have a nonprofit called Break Free Together, where I bring people together to have conversations about purity culture. And I had a purity culture story exchange, and I actually invited my brother. And I had trained the hosts of the tables. So we had multiple tables. It was a dinner experience story exchange. And I had trained the table hosts to be able to hold the complexity of stories that might be sh shared here. And we talked about a lot of different issues that could come up, right? And yet, nonetheless, the table was utterly ill-equipped to be able to hold my brother's truth. And, you know, when he shared a little bit about his own experience with purity culture and relationships and body, he said they all just stared at him with their mouths wide open, like they just couldn't conceptualize you, sexuality, what, right? It was just, we have such a limited imagination. And I think that's true in society as a whole. We have a really limited imagination for sexuality and what it can include and how big it is. And then it also is really true of purity culture. And then at the same time, purity culture does have an imagination about sexuality. And you know that they have an imagination because they shame a greater number of things than a traditional secular culture. So, for example, in purity culture, you learn that every sexual step is like a slippery slope to sin. And different teachers of purity culture believe that the slope gets especially slippery at different points, right? So there are some purity culture purveyors who would teach that even extended eye contact, a member of the opposite sex, because this is a, there are heterosexual assumptions within this culture. But so even extended eye contact with a member of the opposite sex is taboo, right? Like Bob Jones for many years, somebody who went to Bob Jones told me you had to break eye contact every so often. Like it was a something that was expected of them.
I'm glad I never got
So
that.
whereas with other people, it's the holding of hands, or with other people, it's that kiss or whatever it may be. So in a strange way, purity culture recognizes how big sexuality is and then creates a lot of shame and blame and judgment around it. But if we were to take that same understanding and within a sex positive realm, we could understand sexuality as bigger and more complex and more inclusive and be more interested in what it could include for all of us. Because it is something that impacts. And we're all a part of, right? We all live in this world that where we have different senses and are taking the world in, and we have different experiences of sensation that we just can categorize as sexual or not.
Yeah, and it's crazy. Like the no sex before, and my church that I grew up going to was great. They believed what they believed, but they didn't like shame anybody for doing anything, or like they said, there's grace for you. But still, I internalized like a lot of the shame. Oh, and it's complicated to explain, so I'm gonna truncate it. But I'm on a Medicaid waiver. That helps me with my disability, hiring an aide, getting some needed equipment, all that stuff. And if I make over a certain amount of money, I don't qualify for the waiver anymore, and I basically get kicked off the waiver. Now, if I get married, they count both your incomes as one income because you're married. But if I live with them and don't get married, then they count them as two because you're not married. And so,
Perfect example. Perfect
I
example. Yeah.
struggled for so many years with, oh my God, you get that. But I have just now come to realize that, okay, it's not God that made that rule. It's man that made that rule. You can't do about it then.
So you're describing deconstruction, what people who are in the situation that you're in, that I have been in there for many years, you're deconstructing the notions you were raised with that you just believed were how life was, and realizing, no, somebody constructed this. This is not just how life is. This is one version of what life is that was presented to me that actually supports one else but doesn't support me and my thriving and my ability to keep Medicaid, etc.
And I was opening up into a small group that I went to about it. I trusted them. Like, it's a Zoom small group, but they're great. And lo and behold, I found out that there's people in similar situations.
Like, you've got this notion that you learn in purity culture that your life is going to look a very specific way. You are going to be a young man and meet a young woman, and you will both have been utterly pure, quote unquote, right? And then you will get married and you will have a sexual life. Suddenly your sexuality will turn on like a light switch, right? And we'll have kids, and it will just look like that sort of white American dream. Because, by the way, this is an American phenomena, right? Though there are similar teachings in other cultures, to be sure. Purity culture, the purity movement, is a very white American evangelical thing. But anyway, and then you live into the reality of people's lives, and it is so much bigger and messier, and so much is not taken into account. Like, what happens when somebody is sexually violent? There's no conversation about that within purity culture. What happens when somebody has a, for example, I'll tell you a little bit about my brother. What happens when somebody was raised within a purity culture where all the young girls were taught to dream about a very particular reality being awaiting them as a reward for their purity, which I just described to you, hyper masculine man who's going to be the leader of the household and the leader, da, 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 and then they're going to be the follower. And there's this very specific picture that they were all taught would be their destiny. And not only were taught would be their destiny, but I don't know if you remember experiencing this growing up in purity culture, but a lot of us were actually, you know, trained to obsess over it almost as a way to keep us sexually inactive. We were taught to like take all of our sexual and romantic energy and project it onto our future life. So people were writing letters to their future husbands and filling journals for their future husbands to read and talking with their friends about, well, my husband's going to be like this, my husband's going to be like that. And you become attached to this very specific version of what your promised life is going to look like. And then enter my brother, right? Who was funny and brilliant and would be a great partner in a million ways and did not fit into this hyper masculine, strong. He had a lot of health issues. Yeah. So he spent years wanting to enter into that dream that they had all been promised would be their reward for purity. Years having crushes on the women that he was in groups with, being in love with women from purity culture. They just did not see him. And his great dream was to receive that reward. And when my brother passed away in his mid-50s, I know it was one of his greatest pains was that he had not gotten married, not had kids, not had that picture, that perfect picture that he had been promised and that he too had longed for. But really the only women who saw my brother and had interest in him in that way were the women he was meeting outside of the church, the women who were taboo, the women who he wasn't supposed to be with, the women he'd meet at a bar, right? And so he ended up developing this kind of like twofold life. He had a life that he lived within the church and that all his church friends knew about him. And they thought they knew him inside and out, everything about him. And then he had a second life, you know, that those people didn't know anything about. And he had a tremendous amount of shame about that, right? That reductive, again, I keep saying the word reductive over and over, but I feel like it's so relevant, right? That reductive worldview and dream, you know, he didn't fit into it. And so he didn't receive it either because the girls had been taught to look for something else, right?
I won't get into too much, but it's crazy. And I feel like it's getting better. Some would say it's swinging the opposite way now, but it's getting better, thank God. I feel like purity culture for women is, and again, not this is not the message my church gave. It's just like what I got is you have to be this like thin, hot person. And you're talking thin, hot person. So good luck.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And you're not the only one who got that message. In fact, you could talk to people around the world who were raised in purity culture. And I say around the world because even though I named this as an American phenomenon, it's been spread around the world, this very American thing. But anyway, you're not the only one who got that message. And so my point being, there are certain things that are said in purity culture in so many words, and there are certain things that are communicated in purity culture. They might not be stated outright, but they are communicated clearly enough that kind of everyone gets the message, right? And thin and hot and all of those things are some of those messages. So is whiteness, for example. I remember talking with a Black woman who told me the white girls were afraid of losing their purity. I felt like I never had purity to begin with. Like my skin color made me feel like I never had that purity within that culture.
And I know it's probably a private thing, but can you elaborate on why she felt that way? Because I'm trying to learn here.
Yeah. I think it's very similar to what you were talking about, the expectations of like thinness, et cetera. It might not be stated outright, but you look in the books and people look a certain way. You see who the speakers are and they look a certain way. You hear the stories about your husband comes home and things are said outright about body. Your job is to dress up for him when he comes home from work and to have the makeup on. And there are a lot of things that are stated that make strong implications about
again,
appearance.
My church wasn't bad. I'm so glad I didn't grow up in one of the really bad ones, but I know people that have got that message, and that's crazy.
Yeah. And interestingly, I actually think that churches often are more muted on these topics than the products of the purity culture world.
Yes.
Because I feel like churches are actually like on the ground with real people. So they actually see the shame, they see the pain, they see the looks on someone's face when they say something really messed up. So I find that churches tend to be a little more mitigated, but they still will hand out the books that say the really bad stuff. And they'll still show the movies or encourage you to go see the movies or go to the conferences or go to the retreats. And those are the places, those parachurch organizations, those books, those products, those are the places where you're getting like a more strong message that the church, you know, might not saying those words, but they are getting their stamp of approval to those things, right?
And
it still comes through.
My pastor is so funny. He admits he doesn't like faith-based movies usually because he thinks they're cheesy and stuff. But I watched a lot of faith-based stuff because I watched like a ton of faith-based stuff because I thought that's like what you were supposed to do. That's where I think the other churches that I watched or something, that's where I internalized those messages kind of.
Yeah, and I don't think it's an accident that the people who are creating those messages are not the ones living and breathing with people on the ground every day. It is very different to be up on your high horse talking about how people should live their lives, but not being a pastor. A pastor has to, like, not to say that pastors always make the right decisions, but a pastor is sitting with people and counseling with people and day to day in and day out, working through life struggles with people. Yeah. So I do often find they are not always, right? This is certainly, it's a varied world and people are varied, but I do find it's the parachurch organization stuff and the media stuff that tends to be the most strongly stating these problematic messages.
Yeah. And it's in media in general, but especially in Christian media, like you don't have people like me represented and they don't really explore the nuances of it either. So it's either this or it's
100%, 100%. 100%.
You told me something about your brother that was very profound to me. You said that they treated him like he was like an infant, kind of. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but and then they found out he was brilliant, and then they treated him like he was this inspirational saint. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because inspirational porn is a huge issue in the community and having to live up to it.
And is related to purity culture. Yeah, so I'm happy to answer that, and then I'll even tie it back to our topic at hand. Yeah, so yeah,
That's
what
what
you
I
kind of
wanted
talked
you to
about
do.
is
I
the
didn't
fact that
phrase the question correctly. I'm sorry.
no, you did it perfectly. You did it perfectly. Yeah, you could. It's a larger thing. It touches on purity culture, but it also is just so much bigger than purity culture. Yeah. So my brother, everywhere we went. So first of all, my brother, severe speech impediment. He had a limited use of one hand, very limited use of one hand, no use of the other, in a wheelchair. Just we had his hand was like he couldn't move it. So when I say limited, like he could do things with it, but he couldn't move his fingers. We would go to the mall together, for example, and he would be buying a shirt for himself. And somebody at the desk when we were checking out would be talking to me instead of talking to him. So
Yeah,
this
that
kind of
happens to
what
me
I the term
all
I used was
the time.
infantilizing. Yeah. And they would hand the pen to me to sign the credit card. And like it was like they just only looked at me. And my brother would he would always respond by breaking through their assumptions. And so he would say something, ignore him. They wouldn't take the time to hear what he was saying. They would talk to me. And then he would finally get their eye contact for long enough that they would listen to him. And he would crack a joke. That was always his thing. He would crack a joke. And the second that he cracked a joke, or the second that they saw me hand the pen to him and it fit into his fingers, and he could sign his name without moving his fingers, right? Or whatever the case would be, it was like a light bulb went off, and they were like, "What? He's funny? You must be the most amazing person who's ever existed." And they would call over other people, and they'd be like, "Oh, you got to meet this guy," and I'd be like, "Y'all, he made a joke. Here I am, his little sister, right?" So I'm like, "You shouldn't have been judging him and assuming he wasn't capable, and also, don't all need to meet him because he made a joke. Everyone calm down." You're just someone's buying a shirt. Treat him like someone who's buying a shirt. So there was one time, and that was really how he lived his life. And I remember going to the mall. We would go to the Gap, and he would go from being seen as worthless to being seen as a hero by the time we left the Gap. And then we would go to, I don't know, whatever the next store was, and he would go in being seen as worthless and go out being seen as a hero. And then we would go into the next store, and he would go in being seen as worthless and go being seen as like a god. Like it was constant, constant. And over time, I felt more and more as my brother got older. And this was especially bad in the church, because the church, the evangelical church in particular, the church that sort of developed the purity movement, is that binary that I described about gender. That binary can be found all over that culture: good, bad, saved, unsaved, one of us, one of them, right? To be trusted, to be distrusted, no matter what they say, right? They're just of worthless, worthy, right? Like terrible, perfect. And so in the church, my brother, and you know how the church works. So you're in small groups, you're in gossip moves fast, and everybody gets a reputation in the church. So if somebody thinks that someone has done something bad and has become bad, like some woman is now deemed impure, the whole church knows, because someone's, "Oh, I'm gonna bring this to the prayer circle. I gotta pray. We gotta pray for Lucy. She's doing this sexual thing. We gotta pray for her." Like spreading gossip in Christian, like church ways, right? So anyway, the whole go like everyone starts to have the same opinions about people. So if you are deemed pure within that culture, you are seen as perfect. And if you are deemed as impure, you are seen as worthless, right? And everyone somehow gets the memo by this spiritualized gossip, right? So my brother, in these churches that he would go to, would become larger than life. Like he was like beyond a hero, right? He was, even because it was a religious setting, I feel like sometimes even deified. Like people saw him as more spiritual because he could crack joke even though he struggled in life. They saw him as more holy. They saw him as, he became this sort of could do no wrong, perfect guy who, by the way, deeply, deeply wanted to be in a partnership, had sexual needs and sexual desires that were not acceptable within the culture, and could not find a partner within the culture. So that perfect guy, that hat that he wore of being everyone's hero whenever he was in the church, he couldn't wear it all the time. You know what I mean? The other parts of him didn't belong there. And if the other parts of him had been found out, he would have either had to be perfect or he was nothing. And it made relationships very difficult and very fractured, and really was incredibly hard.
How much prejudice that we have to face. I don't know where it all comes from, but it's starting to get better now. Hollywood's starting to be more and more open to people with disabilities. Not that
Yeah.
Hollywood's the greatest at times either, but I feel like that's where it starts. So
Yeah.
yeah, if you haven't watched, I know people don't like those award shows anymore, but I watch them because I want to be in the industry. But if you haven't watched this moment from the Emmys when Christina Applegate came out and it was her first time since going public about her MS diagnosis, they all stood up, and I don't think they were trying to be like
Yeah.
inspiration-ish. I think they were just trying to be supportive because she had some trouble walking and balancing. She was on the host arm. The host walked her out because she had trouble balancing. And so they were giving her this whole standing ovation, and they quieted down. And she's, y'all are totally shaming me by standing up right now. But
Did
anyway,
she say?
she said, y'all are totally shaming me with a disability by standing up right now. Body not
I heard that part.
Ozempic. And I lost it.
Yeah, 100%. It used to drive me crazy. It used to drive me crazy when my brother and I would be out for dinner together. Somebody would walk over to our table and be like, the gentleman at that table buying your dinner. And I'd
Oh
be
my
like,
God.
my brother makes good money. My brother makes probably makes more money than that guy makes because my brother's super smart. He doesn't care money. I
Yeah, and
understand you
people
mean well,
never paid
but
for
please don't make
our
assumptions.
people never like paid for our meal or anything. I did have one guy give me like a free sweater that I wanted one time, but I didn't even like ask for it. He just gave it to me. And
Devin, I watched my brother have his Starbucks paid for in line more times than I can count. More times than I can count.
that's crazy. But they will come up to the table, or some of them will come up to the table and be like, oh, she's so
You're like, yes, I am quite precious. Thank you. It has nothing to do with what you're seeing right now. But on the inside, I'm deeply precious. That is true. That is true. Thank you for noticing my deep inner preciousness that
precious.
you are somehow seeing come through my eyes. Yeah, I do have to tell you, I do have to tell you one story. It's a good one. All right. So my brother and I went on a cruise. He bought the cruise for the two of us as a present for me for having graduated from grad school. So it was like a grand gift, right?
If you graduate from grad school, you deserve that. Cause
I deserved a cruise. I
yes.
was like really excited about it. Yes, thank you. I felt good about it. But anyway, so he ended up right before the cruise, he was in horrific back pain because sitting in the chair all the time, the vertebrae were rubbing against each other, and
Yeah,
he was
Luckily, I don't deal with any
Horrific
chronic
pain.
pain, but for the people who do.
Yeah. By the way, chronic pain, chronic illness, aging, all things that are not part of the purity culture picture, all invisible aspects of life. Okay. So anyway, so he was in horrific pain, and as a result, he actually needed me to be more caretaking than I traditionally would be, right? He's a highly functional individual, a highly functional individual, but he was in so much pain that he did need me to do certain things. And his electric wheelchair was broken. So I also had to be pushing him. So
Oh,
the combination of the back pain and not having an electric wheelchear, it was like I was really was looking like something.
and for those of
Anyways.
you that don't know, these have customizable settings where you can like bring the back up and down. Some of them can even put you into a standing position, bring the foot pedals out, and position your
Bring
body
you
in
to eye
different,
contact with someone that you're
yeah.
talking to so they're not looking down at you.
And position your body in certain ways that actually help with pain. And so to not have that and just be stuck in a basic manual wheelchair where your forces sit in one position makes it worse. Okay, that's why
Yes.
that's bad.
It makes everything worse. It makes the pain worse. It makes your ability to like talk to people and be seen and respected worse, all of it. So anyway, I remember we were on the cruise ship and everybody on the cruise ship kept coming up to me, talking to me, and they kept saying over and over, "You're such an angel. Oh, you're here with your brother on the cruise. You're such an angel." And when I would say things like, "Oh, we take care of each other," which of course is just like feeding into their story. And I could just see my brother like seething. Oh, I bought her this cruise. I could just see him seething. And so the whole cruise, everybody was coming up to us. So then a couple of days before the end of the cruise, they were going to have a hairy chest contest. And I remember saying to my brother, "Hey, you should do the hairy chest contest. You're like, you have this super hairy chest and back. You could totally win between the two." And he was like, "Oh, I'm in so much pain. I don't know if part of the hairy chest contest was to take your shirt off." And I was like, "That's okay. We'll do it. Like, I'll come out with the towel and in front of you and I'll whip it off. We'll make it fun." And he was like, "No, I'm gonna do it, and then I'm gonna do it by myself." And I was like, "Okay." So he did the hairy chest contest, and he put himself in unbelievable pain to perform at top level at that contest. They had to yell Adrian. Everyone had to yell Adrian, and he was like, "Adrian." And then they had to take their shirt off. And I will tell you, he put his fist back there on the shirt and yanked and pulled it up and shook it up in the air. And everyone was so the incredible amount of pain he must have been in having done that, given what his back was experiencing. Obviously, he won the hairy chest contest, and then they put the hairy chest contest, along with all the other kind of things that they were doing on the cruise, on the loop of cruise activities that
Yeah,
play in
like
everyone's room.
cruise TV. Oh, God.
Yeah, cruise TV. So it was like every half an hour, the hairy chest was showing in everybody's room. Every half an hour, you saw him go, "Ah," or like, "Yeah, Andrea." Anyway, in a moment, the entire cruise ship did the thing that happened at every store in the mall, one at a time, simultaneously. And they all collectively moved from Linda's the angel and her brother is the invalid that she's caring for to he is the hero, incredible man, and you are lucky to get to be with him. And so now all of a sudden, we're going around the cruise ship and people are coming up and they're talking to him and they're saying, "Man, that was so amazing. I saw that. You're so cool." And they're saying to me, "You are so lucky to have him as your brother." And I went to like a group thing without him one time and they were all talking about him and they were like, "Oh, did you all see the hairy chest contest and that man and the, oh my gosh, and the inspiration?" And on the one hand, like I say, this is complicated because on the one hand, it was incredibly inspiring. He pulled that out of thin air. Like that, the amount of pain and determination and resilience it took for him to do that was unbelievable, right? But on the other hand, you really saw the way in which people dehumanized him. And then the minute that they saw him do something that didn't fit into their expectations, right? The same way as in the mall when he cracks a joke for him doing that hairy chest contest, he went into this inspiration porn realm, right? Yeah. That was the most intense version of that I have ever experienced. And my
That
brother was eating it up. He was like, yes, she is lucky to have me as her brother.
oh my gosh, of course. If I had siblings, I would be like, yes, they're so lucky to have me.
Yeah, that's the thing. He actually loved hearing, whereas I would be offended when people would buy our meal or something. Loved it. He loved it. And I used to be like, that's like, why did they buy your Starbucks? What assumptions are they making about you that they think that you can't buy your own Frappuccino? And he was like, I love it. I love it. It became addictive in a way that caused other problems where he felt he had to live into this. My brother did adhere to purity culture in other ways as well. For example, he was a white man and he had white male privilege within that culture. And he was not a fan of my work. He did not think that women were raised with anything problematic in purity culture. He didn't think purity culture teachings were hard on women. He was like, I don't see it. So even though he experienced a lot of difficulty and a lot of resilience, he also had a lot to say about other populations and how their sort of second-class citizenship was fine. So we all are complex, is I guess what I'm getting at. Like there we can be impressed and proud and also annoyed, and people are complex, life is complex, sexuality is complex. Anytime we're making things overly simplistic and not looking at the context and the complexity, we run into trouble.
Yes, that is a great way to end it. Anything else you would like to add?
No, I feel like we covered a lot. Yeah.
Yeah,
Oh, actually, I do have one more thing I'd like to add. Somebody I have learned a lot from in this area is she has holds many roles. Her name is Jade T. Perry, and she is somebody who talks about disability and purity culture in the overlap of those things. So I
I
really
will write
appreciate
that
her.
down.
Yeah, and please feel free to keep that in the podcast so that people can look her up who listened to this episode as well.
She might be a future guest now that you've
You
said
might
that.
indeed. Yeah.
Can you put me in touch, or do you have
Yeah.
her?
Yeah. Yep. Will you send me an email and remind me?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll
So
reach
where
out to
can
her and make
people
sure it's
follow
okay,
you on
but
social media?
you can follow me on Instagram. I'm not as active as I ought to be, but I'm there. I also have a Facebook account, but I'm more active on Instagram.
Okay.
Under my full name, Linda, and then my middle name, Kay Klein.
And then we will put the link in the show notes for people to get in touch with you. And I assume it's all on your website, like where to get the book and all that stuff.
Totally.
Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for coming on. And we will see you guys next time. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to follow the show and our guests on social media and subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast app using the links in the show notes. Please remember to rate and review us. See you next time.